This is Hockey Central 960 with Haley Salvian on your official home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, it's a potentially big day in Calgary. News conference about the often discussed, long-awaited potential replacement for the Scotiabank Saddle Dome is going to be held at 3:30 today, featuring representatives from the city, Calgary Sports Entertainment Company, and the province. So we got news today, important announcement regarding the future event center at 3:30 Mountain Time. That came out of the city council meeting today. CSEC president and CEO John Bean's going to be there. The mayor's going to be there, as I mentioned, representatives from the team in the province. Sounds like they might have struck a new event center deal. We are going to try to have that news conference and that announcement taken live here on Sports at 960. So be on the lookout for that. We'll have more updates potentially on that scheduling in this show or into the next hour before that announcement. Again, that's going to be at 3:30. Welcome into Hockey Central here on Sports at 960. The Fan, I'm Haley Salvian here with you for the next hour. That's the big news of the day, you know, for the local market here is, yeah, is this going to be the one? Is this finally going to be the event center that fans can see? Ryan Pike has done a great job with this over the last couple years. He's with Flames Nation. You hear him here on Sports at 960 all the time as well. I guess we could kick this back to 2013 when the Saddle Dome flooded. And then in 2015, we got Calgary next. 2017, negotiations breakdown. 2019, we get a deal. And then in December 2021, that deal breaks down. But April 2023, looks like we might have a deal. I hope this is the one for Flames fans who are looking for a new home for the Calgary Flames, who've been wanting this for a long time. We will hopefully get some more details about that again at 3:30 this afternoon. Just let us know in the text line 960-960. Is this finally the one? Do you have a memory of the Saddle Dome? Let us know what you think. Are you excited for this news? Do you have like a sense of dread with this news, considering we've been talking about this for years? Let us know in the text line 960-960. And other Calgary news before we get into some of the playoff matchups. Andrew Mangiapane has underwent successful shoulder surgery, the team announced this afternoon, and he will be ready for participation in training camp, says the Flames. Could maybe explain the down year for Andrew Mangiapane. Wonder how long he is playing through that, but we also don't want to speculate too much. Don't know when and how that happened, but we do know that he had surgery and he's expected to be ready and healthy for camp next year. Throughout the show today, we're going to have Patrick O'Neill from the LA Kings. He covers the Kings. He's a play-by-play reporter, color analyst for the Kings. He's going to join the show shortly here to tee up a big game between the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers, game five of what's been a really fun series. Three overtimes in one game that was essentially a one-goal contest between those two teams. So that's been a fun series. We'll talk to Patrick coming up soon. And then Thomas Drance from The Athletic. He typically covers the Vancouver Canucks, and you hear him on Sportsnet in Vancouver as well, but he's actually been in Seattle covering that Kraken series. Again, another really fun one. A lot of the Western Conference series have been great, really physical, really fast. Lots to dig into there. The last piece of news of the day, and I guess it could relate locally here because Cale Makar, local guy, he's been suspended for one game after a hearing with the Department of Player Safety for interference on Jared McCann last night in game four between the Avs and the Kraken. The hit was in the first period. Makar was assessed a major penalty on the play, but it was changed to a minor for interference after video review. Didn't agree with that. It was a really late hit. The puck looked like it was in the stands by the time Makar got to McCann, and Dave Hakstol actually after the game said, quote, "I believe the puck is being caught by a fan as McCann is being run into the end wall." Hakstol was not happy. their 40-goal scorer was not available to them for the rest of the game. He did say as well that McCann is not going to play in Game 5 and his status for the rest of the series slash rest of the playoffs should the Kraken continue is not known at this time. He's obviously a very important player for Seattle, so that's a big loss. Makar, on the other hand, said he didn't realize the puck had gone out of play. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody, and I believe him. Like, I don't think anyone's accusing Cale Makar of being a bad guy or a dirty player. Like, he's not a villain. This is the guy who waved off a weak penalty call that the refs called, you know, this season. Because he was like, no, don't give us a power play that wasn't a penalty. He's been on Lady Bing votes, etc. over the last couple of years, the first couple of years of his career. Nobody thinks Cale Makar is a villain, but two things can be true. He seems like a good guy, but that was a bad hit. It was a very late hit, and I'm not surprised at all that there was a suspension for that hit on Jared McCann. But we will table that discussion about the Kraken and the Avs for later in the show when Drance joins us. And now we're going to go to the Atlas Pizza guest hotline and welcome in Patrick O'Neill, covers the LA Kings, sportscaster in LA. Patrick, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Haley, thanks. Pizza. Hey, clip this for posterity. Kings in six. They're going to dominate tonight, get the crowd out of it. Why? Kopitar and Doughty, they've been down on the ropes before. Down 3-0 to the Sharks. No problem. No panic. Better goaltending tonight. Fired up for game five.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I was going to come on at this. Like, how's everyone feeling? You're in Edmonton. It's game five tonight. Like, what's the vibe check? Seems like it's pretty good. I was expecting this series to go the distance. Calm and confident over there?
No, 100%. Didn't mean to interrupt you there, for sure. So confident. And, yeah, you know, they coughed up a 3-0 lead. They had it 4-3 in the third period. And, you know, an incredible snipe by Kane. I think the Hyman goal was something Korpisalo, you know, he's got to make that save, no doubt. But on the plane with the team heading over yesterday, just nice and easy, a nice easy skate today. Guys are working on their game. But the reason why I like the Kings tonight, because Adrian Kempe, Andrei Kopitar, and Kevin Fiala, the difference that he has coming back. That line with Phil Deneau and Trevor Moore, outstanding. And, you know, and excuse me, the third line with Fiala and Iafallo and Gabe Vilardi, he's an X factor for me. The way he is playing, silky hands, it's going to be a fun game tonight.
Absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned it, game four slipped away from the Kings after it looked like they were going to go up 3-1 in the series. Edmonton ends up getting the win in overtime. Is that just like a, you know, you got to be a goldfish and wipe the slate clean? Or can they use pieces of that game to say, all right, let's make sure that this was just a blip along the way and not a what might have been type moment for this team?
Well, you guys know Daryl Sutter well. He used to say when he coached the Kings, you park it and you move on. They left that one in L.A. It's a best of three right now. Kings won game five here a year ago, and, you know, they were a different team. They have Drew Doughty back. They didn't have Doughty for that series, and they did not have Kevin Fiala for that series. They know what it's like now to win, and they know what it felt like to lose. Listen, Edmonton, you got to stay out of the box. This is the most potent power play in NHL history, and they proved it certainly in game four. Draisaitl's on the ice for every single goal. It's incredible how good he has been, and, of course, McDavid's fantastic. So stay out of the box gives you a much better chance to win.
And, you know, talking about Draisaitl, you know, looking at the other end, there's two guys you got to pay attention to in Edmonton, obviously, more than just two. But Connor McDavid, the team has done really well to, you know, kind of quiet his offense a little bit. What have the Kings been able to do to kind of stifle some of McDavid's offense so far through four games?
It's funny. We were doing the Kings postgame show the other night, and Derek Armstrong, he's on the show with the Jer Stoll. And Army was like, I think McDavid's been pretty quiet so far. And Stoli's like, he's got three assists. I mean, are you kidding me? Quiet? But I guess that's what it felt like. 5-on-5, I think the Kings, the old, you know, take his time and space away. These guys are so good. You give them any space, they blow right past you. I think, you know, if you look at the top two pairs for the Kings, Drew Doughty and Mikey Anderson have been a solid shutdown pair, 5-on-5 all season. And the second pair, you know, when they acquired Vladislav Gavrikov, as well as Jonas Korpisalo, from Columbus, you know, in that Jonathan Quick trade, and then got flipped to Vegas. I mean, these guys have been unreal. So you got, you needed that stay-at-home left shot D for that second pair, and he also jumps up in the play. But those top two pairs have been excellent at slowing down, you know, not Draisaitl, but doing their best to contain these guys. They're outstanding players.
And you mentioned the stat, Draisaitl on the ice for all of Edmonton's goals. He has been unbelievable for the Oilers. I mean, we already knew that he was a gamer in the playoffs. Flames fans saw that last year when he was going to work against them on one leg, and now we're seeing what Draisaitl can do when he's got two. 5 goals and 9 points through 4 games heading into tonight. With him on the ice, the Oilers are outscoring the Kings 7-3 at 5-on-5. In all situations, Oilers have scored 14. He's been on the ice for every single one. As we just talked about, Kings have done well to slow down McDavid. But that's what makes the Oilers so tough is they've got two of those guys. So they can't let Draisaitl get too much room either. Are there adjustments that they can make when it comes to trying to shut down Leon as well? Or is that just, you know, got to keep trying to do what they're doing with McDavid and on Draisaitl as well?
I think, you know, Haley, all four games have been, you know, incredibly tight, right? 3 of the 4 mm-hmm. overtime, and the other game two loss was the late empty netter of 4-2. It's a one-goal game. So I just think the Kings just stick with what they're doing. You know, I think with Anze Kopitar again and Drew Doughty, you know, having, you know, the championship pedigree, you know, the two cups, the 1-14 down 3-0 in the first round of the Sharks, coming back, being in the room, you know, today after the skate, just going around talking to all the guys and listening in, certainly with some of the media questions, absolutely no panic, such a sense of calm in the room. So they're absolutely ready. It's crazy. I mean, being here for games 1 and 2, I wasn't here in Edmonton last year. It was COVID and we weren't able to really all travel, but man, it's loud. It's all orange. But it's just a great atmosphere. So that, I think the Kings really enjoy playing on the road and playing spoilers. They kind of love, they relish that.
Oh, yes. But the first two games went pretty similar, with the Oilers getting out to a quick lead in front of their hometown crowd. You know, some good power play opportunities, get on the board early, and then the Kings get to play the spoiler as the game goes on. It's been pretty fun to watch. I love this series. When I saw that we were going to get a rematch of last year's first round between these two teams, knowing the way that it went last year, how close the Kings were last year, like, we get to do this again. And now the Kings, as you mentioned, have guys like Fiala on this roster, Korpisalo, Gavrikov. Like, this is a different Kings team than last year, and this series is a lot of fun. I'm very into it. Yeah. It's one of my favorite of the first round.
No, I agree. I think it's the best series so far. I mean, NHL playoffs is the best. The other guy that wasn't part of the seven-game series last year is Victor Arvidsson, and he's been so good in this series so far. So when you look at, you know, Danault, Arvidsson, and Moore as that second line, I would like to see Quentin Byfield, and a lot of people say this back home in L.A., to find a way to get on the score sheet. You know, one empty net goal in 30 games, you know, he's on the top pair, on the top line with Kopitar and Kempe. It'd be great if he could chip in. That would be outstanding for the young man. But I really think with the juice, Adrian Kempe with 40-plus goals and with the way Arvidsson is playing, and then now Fiala on the third line, I think that the fourth line got exposed a little bit, and the Kings got to be wary of playing Doughty and Kopitar big, big minutes. They were shortening the bench in the last game. So, man, if they could roll four lines, that would be huge. And I know we're on in Calgary, and I'm pretty sure we have a lot of Kings fans rooting for LA right. here in this series. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, just making sure.
Oh yeah,
go Kings, come on now.
Yeah, this you know, let us know on the text line 960-960, but that's kind of been the conversation. You know, is everybody all in trying to get a Canadian team to win a Stanley Cup for the first time in years and years, or is the it's a run so deep that everyone in Calgary is like, yeah, we're Kings fans now. So I've been asking that question since the playoffs started. And you know, we had a couple who were like, you know what, let's cheer for Edmonton. Like, they're in the same province. Like, it's all right, go Oilers. But we've got a lot of people rooting for the Kings in this market right now, for sure.
Oh, that's good. It's kind of fun. There is a bit of a difference, right? I mean, L.A., let's face it, it's Lakers, it's Dodgers. And then the Kings, we have a great, you know, support back home, and crypto.com now, right? It's yes. jumping. It's a great building. They had one of the best years at home this year and ever, but I'm just flipping on the TV, flipping through the news here in Edmonton or the channels, and the weather report is on. The guy's wearing his Oilers sweater. I'm like, all right, that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not seeing that back home.
No, not quite. Looking more at this series to tee up to tonight's game five, you know, looking at some of the new additions this year, Kevin Fiala missed the first couple games this series. He comes in, he's got two assists in his first game of this postseason. How are the Kings a different team with Kevin Fiala in the lineup?
Man, they are so deep with Fiala. As soon as he hit the ice, yeah, he missed the first three games. He basically had a scoring chance right away. It was a nice, beautiful backdoor pass that Iafallo should have buried. I don't know. Somebody must have got a stick on it. And then he, you know, picks up two assists in the game. He's a game breaker. He's somebody that we have not seen in Los Angeles in many, many years. He was going to be the leading scorer on the team until he got hurt. And then Kopitar, won the scoring title for the team for the 15th time in 16 seasons. But he's just a great player, you know, and just having 22 on the ice makes all the difference. You can roll those three lines and you have scoring threat, you know, on all three lines. So Kevin Fiala is a tremendous player. That was a great move, great trade, sign and trade for Rob Blake and the Kings.
How has Kopitar been able to continue being such a valuable, if not the most valuable player for the LA Kings for as long as he have? I almost feel like he's somebody who, I don't want to say people like outside of that market forget about, because he's certainly not, but I just wonder if there's people in a lot of markets who knew that Kopitar was still clicking along at the level that he has been for this Kings team.
Yeah, he hasn't slowed down. In fact, it's been one of his best seasons. It's just another 70-point season, 70-plus. He had four penalty minutes on the season in 82 games, two minors, a couple of trips, one in Washington, one in Montreal. That's it. He has to be a finalist for Selke. He's won two. You know, he's been a finalist for MVP. I think he should have won it that year because he's a two-way player, all 200 feet, kills penalties, top power play unit, 5-on-5. He's a horse out there, played 33 minutes last game. He's going to get the banner. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's one of the best in Kings history, and just a leader. He's tremendous, and I think he's somebody that will carry this team to the first round series win over Edmonton. Not going to be easy. They're a good team. I know it, but I do like the Kings in this one.
Where would this team be without that blockbuster trade that you mentioned earlier with Columbus at the deadline? Like, Korpisalo and Gavrikov have been great additions to this roster, yeah, down the stretch run and into the playoffs. Like, just how well have they worked out for LA?
Well, the Kings for most of the season, Haley, they just had, like, they had five right shot D. They just had, you know, like, Jersey playing on his off wing, Sean Walker was playing on his off wing, and Tard right shot playing on the left. They needed a left shot D. Now, it was hard to trade Jonathan Quick, but you pick up a Korpisalo with playoff experience, Gavrikov with playoff experience. The trade absolutely worked. Both these guys are free agents. Can you sign one? Can you sign both? The Kings were flip-flopping Phoenix Copley and Jonas Korpisalo almost right up until the last week of the season. They were alternating starts, but then you kind of got the feeling, all right, Jonas is going to be the man. He got the last couple of starts of the regular season. And the last game, you know, he was a couple of goals under, you know, save expected. But otherwise, in the first three games, he was really, really good. He was making big saves on Connor McDavid. So I expect a better game from Korpisalo here tonight. And the other thing that I like about Gavrikov, very rangy, great reach, but he jumps up into the play. And offensively, he's been a bonus for sure.
So this series has had three overtime games and another that was essentially a one-goal contest. Seems like the series is destined to go the distance. I know you say Kings in six, but would it be the worst thing if we got seven games of this?
Well, only for those of us that have to fly back for game seven. No. You know, if it goes right, seven, that'd be great. It'd be exciting. It's definitely good for hockey. Luckily, I just hope I get to be on that team plane again, because there are no direct flights up here to Edmonton. So I know a couple of our guys on the crew, they got a guy that'll go through San Francisco or Vancouver and customs. They're not happy, but I was fine with it. But I think that it would be tough. It would game seven, but it would be exciting. Wouldn't hate it. You know, would love to see, and there's nothing like game sevens in the NHL. It's just so exciting. So much fun to be a part of. The LA Kings have great support. But I think the most important thing for the Kings is the start of this game. The first two games, they've almost got skated right out of the building. They, you know, withstood some pressure. They had to come back in both of those games, but they were better in 3 and 4 in the first period. Home ice, perhaps, the crowd behind them. But I think that, to me, the first 10 minutes will be very telling here tonight.
All right. Awesome stuff, Patrick. We got a couple more minutes left here with you. I guess one final question. You know, other than their start, is there any other thing that you think this Kings team needs to maybe tweak or adjust to be successful in Game 5? Is it special teams? Because there's been a ton of them throughout this series. I feel like power plays and PKs have been a major talking point between these two teams.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at, like, listen, there's been complaints about some of the calls, right, in this series.
Right.
From Edmonton's perspective, that looked like a trip on Lizotte to me, but a lot of people felt that was kind of a ticky-tack call, right? But that was clearly a cross-check by Bouchard at the end. And, you know, in game one at Edmonton Fields, they probably could have won if it wasn't for those calls. But you can't take those penalties. There was a tripping call in game four, the second period, on Kevin Fiala on Draisaitl that many people in L.A. think there's no way that was a trip. Well, just then don't put your stick in there. But you have to find a way to stay out of the penalty box. So the Gersold's always telling us, he's like, look, three or less, that has to be the key. The Kings had a big kill in overtime. Their penalty kill wasn't great this year, but it got better as the season went along. But they're two very good power play units. The Kings were a top five power play unit, you know, and Edmonton was number one best in history. But Tom McClellan said it in the presser today. That's why you're not seeing a lot of that extracurricular stuff after the whistles, because both teams have a lot of respect for how good the other power play is. So I expect 5-on-5 to be the difference tonight, but I couldn't tell you what the Kings want to do to tweak. I think they played very, very well so far. They just got to stick with it.
Absolutely. It's been a great series, as I mentioned, like one of my favorite ones that I've been watching so far. And I'll be certainly watching tonight, Game 5 between the Kings and the Oilers. Thanks so much for doing this, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Haley, it's my pleasure. Are you allowed to make a pick for this series, or have you already? I just haven't heard it.
I haven't made picks on the radio. I think I wasn't as all in on the Oilers. A lot of my colleagues picked the Oilers to go all the way to the Stanley Cup. I picked Oilers in 7 because I thought, you know, McDavid would go and over the top and take them to the second round when it mattered. But I wouldn't be angry to be wrong about that, because I think the Kings have a lot of depth there. So we'll see. I might be wrong. I wouldn't be mad about it.
All right, good. Well, that's good to know. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a fun conversation, and best of luck to you. You guys sound great on the radio, and I hope to talk to you again.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Patrick. If, you know, Kings win in 6, we'll have you on in the second round, okay?
All right, you got it.
All right, there he goes. Patrick O'Neill, sportscaster covering the LA Kings. You can hear him on play-by-play, color, reporting, real Swiss Army knife there. Kings in 6 is bold. I don't know. I wouldn't be mad about that. I think it'd be very funny, actually. That's kind of been my take whenever the Kings have been up in these games. They've got a lot. They can shut down McDavid. Again, as I mentioned there with Patrick, though, they've got to find a way to take away some of the time and space from Leon Draisaitl, because 14 goals that that team has scored, and he's been on the ice for every single one of them, outscoring his opponents at 5-on-5, 7-3 when he's on the ice as well. And that's what makes the Edmonton Oilers so difficult, is it's not just McDavid, it's Draisaitl, it's Evander Kane, even Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is having a great season. That's why I picked the Oilers in the first round. We'll see. It looks like Stuart Skinner is expected, not looks like, he is expected and is going to start in Game 5, despite getting pulled for Jack Campbell, who came in and pretty much saved the game for Edmonton, I would say, 26 saves on 27 shots when he came into that game in the third period, and then Zach Hyman gets the OT winner. So there's a lot to like. They're a much better team this year. They're built better this year, but the Kings are a real formidable opponent, obviously, given the fact that this series is tied 2-2, and the Kings have done really well against Edmonton so far. So as I mentioned, I love that series. I can't wait to watch that game tonight. And that conversation with Patrick O'Neill was brought to you by Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, using the same secret recipe since 1975. You can dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Take order delivery at 403-248-3344. Once again, on the text line 960-960, let me know, let us know, who are you guys cheering for throughout the playoffs? I feel like if you're a Flames fan looking for someone to cheer for, and it's not just, we got one note in the text line, you know, from one fan who really doesn't like the Kings. They do not like Drew Doughty at all, so they do not like the LA Kings, so that's all right. Another texter said, you know, just not Edmonton. I guess if you're looking for another option, maybe you jump on the Leafs bandwagon, because Mark Giordano, months away from his 40th birthday, is one win away from having some success in the postseason. Finally, he had the assist on the game-winning goal last night in the huge comeback win in Tampa by the Toronto Maple Leafs, down 4-1. Yes, we have the "it was 4-1" jokes. But it was 4-1, and Toronto comes back, wins at 5-4. It's a Mark Giordano point shot that Alex Kerfoot tips in to win it in OT. But we all know, we've heard from players, coaches, fans. We hear it every year in the playoffs. That fourth win of the series is the hardest one to get. The Leafs have a couple opportunities to get it, but nobody, I don't think anybody's ready to say for certain that this year is going to be different until Toronto gets that fourth win, because Tampa's still Tampa. Vasilevsky's been human, but he still got the pedigree. So we'll see how that series finishes. Another text, anyone but Edmonton. I guess that's what we're leaning into. That's why we brought in LA Kings. We're looking at the Kings side. We like LA on this program today, heading into game five between these two teams. A couple texts that we got before we had to break about the event center. We had a fan here who has a Saddle Dome tattoo on their arm. So I guess now I'll need to get a change, they say. I just hope we don't end up with a rectangle like Rogers, or with a Rogers / Scotiabank logo on it. Something cool and unique like the Saddle Dome is / was. And Cam obviously responded, the Saddle Dome will forever be iconic. Your tattoo will always be valid.
It's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's true. I love the Saddle Dome. I mean, I know it's old. It's got its issues. The locker rooms are tiny. Mackenzie Weegar was saying, what, 10 days ago, 11 days ago, Cam, probably need a new arena. Mackenzie Weegar is getting stuff done.
More blunt than that. I think it was just, we need a new arena.
I think that they need to keep the iconic dome shape, but maybe level out the roof inside for better music and acoustics.
Yeah, so you can have concerts. You don't have to drive to Edmonton to go and see
your favorite
artist.
You keep the iconic Calgary-ness of it and just make it more modern.
I love that it's... My favorite dad joke is bringing people near the dome for the first time and saying, hey, did you know that this looks like a saddle?
That's pretty good. I don't think anyone's ever said that before.
Are you serious? Did you know that the Saddle Dome is shaped like a saddle?
I'll have to do that to my friends who are coming this summer.
Huge reporting news.
Yeah. You heard it here first, folks, on Sports at 960 The Fan. This is Hockey Central, where you get the goods. But I think the dome is iconic. But yes, I think everybody is in agreement that it needs a refresher. Do we have an update? Are we going to get that announcement live for everybody listening? 3:30.
Still standing by on that, but we'll tweet it out if we confirm we're getting it.
All right. Yeah. So look out for that programming note, guys. In the meantime, that's coming up in about an hour. But in the meantime, we're going to head to break. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Thomas Drantz from The Athletic and from Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Going to look at the other Western Conference playoff matchup from tonight. That is from yesterday, excuse me. That is Avs and Kraken. And look a little bit more at the Cale Makar suspension, Jared McCann potentially being out for the next couple games here. That's coming up next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to Hockey Central 960 with Haley Salvian on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the program. Just a little under an hour away from the event center announcement. I wonder what it could be. We did hear in the break that we're going to take that announcement at 3:30 here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. That'll come in the middle of Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg, and then I'm sure Pat will react to it after. So stick around on the station for that. You know, maybe Pat will just ignore it completely. He'll take the... I think this is how it's going to go, Cam, actually. Pat is going to take the announcement at 3:30, and then he's going to come back and then not talk about it at all.
So anyways.
Sorry about that interruption. Nothing to see here.
So sorry to hear from the mayor of the city and everything. Anyways.
Anyways. Back to roster building for 2024. We did get a great note in the text line, and we'll get to Thomas Drance in a second here because he is on the line as we look back at the Avs Kraken game from last night and look ahead to the rest of that series. But this is from Eric in Calgary, and 100% agree. Eric says, whatever they do, just make it end in dome. I do not want to stop saying I'm heading to the dome tonight, and I certainly never want to say, hey, are you guys heading down to the CSEC? 100%. And even if it was called the Calgary Sports Event Center, I still think people would call it the Dome. Like, I grew up in Toronto. I grew up going to the Sky Dome. It is still the Sky Dome, and I've never called it anything else. If I'm going to a Jays game, I'm going to the Dome. But I get what Eric is saying, and I totally agree. Don't call it the Event Center, even though they're probably going to call it the Event Center. Call it the Event Dome. The Calgary Sports and Event Dome.
The Calgary Dome.
I think that really rolls off the tongue.
Absolutely.
Anyways, more on that later on the not on this show, but on Pat Steinberg's show. And we're going to go to the Atlas Pizza guest hotline and bring in Thomas Drance. He's from, you hear him on Vancouver, Sportsnet 960. I'm so sorry. Someone just said call it the Battle Dome, and I had to stop and say that's great. I love that. Yeah, absolutely. Book it. Call it the Battle Dome. Let's bring in Thomas Drance. I apologize. I love the text line when they're not being angry towards me. Thomas, what's up? Sorry.
Hey, Haley. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're trying to name the new Calgary Arena, and I what do you think? The Battle Dome? I like it.
Battle Dome's fantastic, although it sounds like a facility that should host slam ball games. You know, one thing that is sort of interesting to me coming back from covering the Kraken, right, is, and this applies to the team I cover too, right? The Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames have a pretty crucial commonality, right, which is that they're two of 32 teams in the NHL that stand alone apart from the rest of the league as clubs that don't have a designated practice facility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both play in aging buildings, although the urgency with which the Saddle Dome is aging is more significant than what it is for Rogers Arena. But make no mistake, I mean, the Canucks were basically dislocated during the preseason, like right after training camp last year, as a result of renovation overruns that occurred at the arena. There's a chance that we'll deal with that again next season as a result of, you know, expected seat upgrades, potentially a new Jumbotron at Rogers Arena. And that's really just scratching the surface. The CapEx investment that the Vancouver Canucks require is going to be big in terms of upgrading that arena over time here. And, you know, at some point you go and cover Seattle, as I did this week, and you see that world-class practice facility, and you watch a game, a playoff game in that barn, and see some of the premium spaces and all of the things that they're able to do with that space. And, you know, it matters. And I don't think it just matters from a fan experience perspective. I think it matters from a player recruitment perspective. I think it matters from the perspective of, retaining top talent, getting them to take less against the salary cap, right? Like, everything that we know you need to be able to do successfully if you're going to win in this league. So was sort of something that I noted, like a prominent takeaway for me coming out of that Calgary series, covering the Kraken this week in Seattle, was, you know, the Canucks are going to have to get on it if they're going to win some of these face-offs to maybe, like, sign a player who's interested in coming to the Pacific Northwest and considering multiple options in the future. And we know that Calgary definitely needs a new barn. Players are explicitly talking about it. And and we certainly heard what Elias Lindholm and Mikael Backlund had to say about their futures. Does that conversation shift if the Flames occupy a world-class facility?
I mean, it doesn't hurt, right? I think it's interesting when you talk about Vancouver and Seattle in this perspective too, because it's like, well, if a player is down to picking the Canucks or the Kraken, and, you know, everything's a dead tie, like salary, everything, whatever it may be, it's a dead tie. And they're like, well, where would I rather live and where would I rather play? Like, they're going to go to Climate Pledge. Mm-hmm. That arena is unbelievable. Their practice facility is unbelievable. The player experience seems unreal. Like, that stuff does matter at the end of the day. Yeah. So it's a good point. You've got the perspective of having just been there during their first playoff victory on home ice at the quote unquote biggest game in Kraken history. I bet it was a great place to be last night.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable atmosphere. And, you know, actually it was a better atmosphere than what we saw on Saturday night for the first sort of Stanley Cup playoff game to be played in Seattle in 103 years, right? That was sort of the more hyped game leading up to it. That felt more like, you know, an event you can feel in the pit of your stomach, more anticipated. Yeah. But, you know, I sort of wonder, like, we see this happen sometimes where, you know, if you're a season ticket holder and you can make back half your investment by selling one ticket, like we sometimes see that. I wonder if more of the hardcores were there last night, because while the arena blew up when given cause to for game three on Saturday night in Seattle, the noise was far more sustained in game four. The crowd was a little bit different. You know, the chants, the Let's Go Kraken sort of permeated throughout the night. And then obviously once you get the bad blood from a really dirty hit that Cale Makar uncharacteristically threw on Jared McCann, like, you know, half a minute after he had relinquished the puck, you know, I think that added to, gave that game an edge. Certainly had the Kraken chasing Makar around, not an easy guy to catch, but they managed to hit him a few times, and certainly amped up sort of the bad blood, the enmity between those two teams. And now with Makar suspended, we certainly have ourselves a series.
Absolutely. So in game five, I want to talk to you a bit more about the Kraken, obviously, because you were at those last two games, Drance. In game five, the Avs are going to be without five of their top 11 scorers from the 2022 Cup run. No Makar, no Landeskog, no Nichushkin, no Kadri, no Burakovsky. Obviously, we know that Andrei Burakovsky is now on the Seattle Kraken. We always knew, like, looking at this series, it was going to be the Avs' elite talent versus Seattle's depth. And what we've obviously seen now that this series is tied 2-2 is that Seattle's depth is doing a very good job trying to quiet down or at least contain a lot of the Avs' talent. 11 different goal scorers for the Kraken so far in the postseason is like the most Seattle stat that I could find, considering how much depth of talent they have on their roster. And so far it's working. And I think they were going to have a difficult time getting out of the first round, but they have a real good opportunity in game five now.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and, you know, it is working to some extent, although there are just moments where McKinnon and Rantanen and then the 3D, and I sort of lump all three of the D into this conversation, because Devon Taves, Bowen Byram, and Makar have all been at just an extraordinarily high level in this series. And there are moments where that plays. I mean, you look at the two goals that Mikko Rantanen scored yesterday. And, like, I really urge your listeners to go watch the highlight of his first goal. So the rush goal that he scored, like, it's a well-played 3-on-3. Rantanen's the trailer, and Wennberg gets back and is in front of him when he sort of gets a pass from McKinnon that McKinnon had to make a move to set up. And Rantanen controls it with one hand. Like, he moves the stick to his right hand and controls it on the backhand by, like, sort of hitting it to himself across his body. And that beak completely throws off both Philip Grubauer and Wennberg, who's a pretty reliable two-way center, in one motion. And then it's basically a one-timer. Like, he almost one-times it to himself across the body, deking out two players while doing it. I mean, that's fabulous stuff. It's subtle, but that was one of the most remarkable highlights I've seen this year. I honestly was floored noticing it in real time. And it's even better on the highlight if you watch it closely. Like, just watch that bit of skill. And then a second goal on the power play. Like, truly, these guys are throwing fireballs. Like, these are fireballers pitching 102 miles per hour right now in the series. And they're going to have to, right? Like, they've had to do that. What's concerning, I think, if you're Colorado, is that as good as Rantanen was yesterday, and as good as McKinnon has been all series, Like, Alexander Georgiev was their best player, and by a fair margin, and they still lost.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now you're without Makar, who's been the puppet master for this team all season, but especially in this series. You know, they're in a tough spot. This is going to be a big load on Rantanen and MacKinnon. And then you sort of look up and down the lineups, and it's like the Avs had to play five forwards for 20 minutes or more. You know, you sort of look at the crux of the game, and they even shortened their bench in terms of Josh Manson no longer seeing regular shifts as the game went on. And you know, I think he played two or three shifts in about 15 minutes on the game clock when he gets beat by Tanev and Schwartz and takes the penalty that Eberle capitalizes on to sort of win the game. They've got guys like Malgin and Myers. They were, you know, sub 6 minutes in a playoff game that went to overtime. They just don't have a lot. Like, they don't have a lot. And now that they've woken the Kraken up, right, now that the Kraken were chasing hits and playing more physically, like, that just increases the wear and tear on the players that the Avalanche are riding, you know, some of these forwards like their defensemen, and who they're going to need to be at just an extraordinarily high level if they're going to, you know, avoid being sort of victimized in the first round in a pretty significant upset.
Yeah. Yep. It's still going to be tough because the Avs have, you know, been there, done that. They do have the experience of having won the Stanley Cup the last time it was awarded, but the Kraken have guys who have been there, done that. And Yanni Gourde has been just I think we already knew this based on what we saw from him in Tampa, but I think he's like the perfect playoff player.
Yeah.
I love watching this guy play in the postseason.
There's an interesting sort of thought too, where, you know, watching Gourde chase MacKinnon around the ice. And look, MacKinnon's had moments where he's absolutely taken over this series. In game two, game three was one of the most dominant individual performances you'll ever see live in the Stanley Cup playoffs from MacKinnon. But
yeah,
Gourde feels like he's designed in a lab to chase this guy around in a playoff series. And boy, might that have been useful for the Tampa Bay Lightning a year ago, right? Which, you know, I think speaks to sort of the challenge that the teams have and an advantage that the Kraken have had in constructing a team capable of doing even this, right? Which is playing the defending cup champs with, you know, four or five super elite players at the absolute top of their games to a draw through four games in the series. And, you know, they'll go into game five as, you know, far like not significant underdogs on the betting lines relative to where you would have expected prior to the series. And you know, that's that the cap comes for all teams, right? Like the hard cap comes for all teams. Great teams like Colorado get hollowed out extraordinarily quickly. Tampa, we've seen it happen too. And, you know, the flip side of that coin is if you're the Kraken and you're born into a league where teams are restricted in what they can spend on their rosters, on their personnel, you know, you have $81.5 million in cap space. You're inheriting zero bad contracts. There are no mistakes yet. And you know, you could argue that the Kraken have maybe made a few. Philip Grubauer's been good in this series, but I don't know that you'd want that deal on your books if you were any other team. That said, you know, you look at how they've gotten here. You look at, you know, the flexibility to sign Schultz and Schwartz and trade, you know, Magic Beans for Oliver Bjorkstrand, sign Martin Jones after Driedger gets hurt, you know, $2 million clip for this year. They've been able to graft a fair bit of talent, even if you didn't like how they managed their expansion draft, and I didn't, through pure restraint, through the flexibility to just keep grafting talent onto their roster using, you know, the most valuable cudgel, the most valuable resource in the scarce resource environment that NHL teams operate in, which is, at the end of the day, cap space. It's been an interesting thing to watch. And, you know, it's not, again, talking to Flames and Canucks fans, like, the bad news is they're going to have a lot of cap flexibility again this summer. And now we're going to be able to pitch players pretty credibly. Come join us, play in world-class facilities for a raucous fan base, and you'll probably make the playoffs.
I think for all the, you know, mistakes people kind of called Ron Francis out for of the expansion draft, like, oh, how are you not going to take Vladimir Tarasenko? How are you going to not pick this, that, whatever guy? I think it's aged very well based on the flexibility that he created for himself. Like, this was always the plan, right? They always wanted cap space and they always wanted their young prospects. And I think, you know, it's been so interesting to track Seattle versus Vegas, because Vegas doesn't have a Matty Beniers playing meaningful minutes in the postseason right now because they traded that, you know, Matty Beniers type player. You know, mind you, they have, Mark Stone and Jack Eichel and Alex Pietrangelo playing really well in the postseason, but they've taken two different paths. And I think it'd be kind of fun to see those two teams play against each other in the playoffs. I don't know if that's possible. We'll see how it goes.
Well,
but
And it's interesting too, because, you know, I do think one of the limitations that the Kraken are going to bump into that's sort of been clarified by what they've seen on the other side of this series is, you know, I mean, this is no secret, I'm not breaking ground here, but how do you get a Byram, a Rantanen, a MacKinnon, and a Makar? Picking the top 10.
Yep.
Picking the top 10, right? I mean, that's not new. And, you know, the Kraken, they got Matty Beniers, Shane Wright fell into their laps. But do you think that team's picking in the top 10 in the next couple of years? Like, doesn't look like it, right? I mean, they look to be a pretty sustainable playoff caliber team in terms of their construction. Obviously, anything can happen in terms of injuries or tough goaltending or whatever. So how do they graft? How do they find their Rantanen, their MacKinnon, their Makar answer? Given sort of how quickly they've emerged as a middle-of-the-road caliber team. You know, that's sort of going to be the fascinating challenge here. And you know, Vegas, basically, they sort of built a middle-of-the-road caliber team that happened to catch fire and make the Stanley Cup playoffs in year one. But what have they done since? They've gone big game hunting every offseason. Pacioretty, Stone, Eichel, Pietrangelo. And, I mean, you can add star-level players in the NHL, particularly if you harvest as many assets as Vegas did right out of the gate with a predatory expansion process. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still, like, cap space might rule the offseason, but you need elite players in May and April and June. And, you know, the Vegas experience has shown us, but it's also shown us how expensive it is to add that type of player.
Absolutely. All right. This was a fun little spin around the Pacific Northwest / Western Conference with you, Thomas. Thank you so much for doing this. We'll do this again. Do you get to go back to Seattle or no? You back in van?
No, I don't know. I'll see. I mean, I wanted to go down for these two games and cover sort of the Kraken's first playoff experience. Now I'm back in Vancouver. It's sunny. I'm going to go to the beach. So we'll see. We'll see where I'm at later in the week.
All right. Amazing. Love that for you. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the beach.
Thanks for having me, Haley. Cheers. Bye.
All right. There goes Thomas Drance. You can hear him on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, covers the Canucks for The Athletic and was, as you heard, in Seattle for their first two playoff home games ever. The biggest Kraken games in their history. Live here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We will talk to you guys tomorrow.